Hey, welcome to the Bizarre Briefing for June 2016. I'm Bryce Castillo, joined with Brant Hughes.
Hi.
And our fill-in guest, Roberto Villegas. How are you?
Hey there, everybody.
John Tilton is in California seeing his family on vacation.
Ooh. Or something.
Something like that.
Look, vacations are important. I think it's important to see family and say hi to people.
Not important when it comes at the expense of this show.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fair. I mean, I'm remoting in, so...
I think he was going to try to remote in, it sounded like, mm-hmm. and then there was an event happening right now.
Because of course
there is. Yeah. In the middle of a day on a Monday. What? So, welcome, Roberto. If you don't know, Roberto runs audio on Scam School a lot. Is a good friend of ours. We've done a lot of shows with and Roberto and CosmicRadio.tv, his podcast mm-hmm. network. Be sure to check that out.
Cinematography available in your own RSS feeds.
Yeah, we did Jump Point for a while before Charles and Michael and Rosa filled my space.
And you're always welcome to come back. It's not like that. Mm-hmm. It's not like the seat just magically disappeared. It's just sort of, well, whenever Bryce wants to come back, he's always welcomed.
Yeah, hit me up sometime because I would love to be back on. But this is the Bizarre Briefing. This is where we talk behind the scenes of the Scam School YouTube channel, the Scam Stuff store, the Modern Rogue show, our giveaway videos, Scam School Remix. And thank you for checking out for another month.
Yeah.
What do we want to... We've got Roberto here. Maybe let's start off talking about sort of where Roberto fits in with like the whole crew.
Like, where do I fit in the bizarre magic?
And I'd be really interested to hear some of your experiences since, like we get a tremendous amount of feedback, like, immediately on our work because, you know, we sit there and we put these episodes together and people just spew out garbage out of their mouths all the time.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's nice, sometimes it's not.
I still remember like the one time Brant and I were just kind of hanging out. I think we were filming a cinematography thing. And I talked about this on my podcast at one point. And we're just going through all the YouTube comments because Brant, I don't know if you've talked about this, but you typically look, you know, to the comments on the YouTube channel, either accept or decline things.
First, flagged as spam and whatever.
Right. And so you just get this like smattering of both, you know, awesome show, bro, to... Hey, check out my cool new YouTube channel. And it's amazing to see what things just come down the pipeline in a comment and then to go down and figure out who those users are and to figure out the stuff that they're posting. And we just like went down a bizarre rabbit hole for that.
Yeah. But so you do audio and the interesting thing I think about that is that at least with my episodes, like what the people hear from the episode is not entirely indicative of your recording process since I go through and, you know, mix through every track of dialogue and all of that stuff to make it – to clean it up a little bit and sound pristine. So really, your only, like, direct feedback is through us telling you something. And at least in my experience – been pretty sparse.
It's interesting because, I mean, for those who don't know, I tend to work the live audio. Like, everything you see as a final product is thanks to these two guys here. I have ultimately no input in terms of that. I mean, I do ask, you know, typically I may throw an idea for an ad or two towards, you know, Brant or Bryce's way just in terms of like, man, you should really continue this or it'd be really funny to see this. But typically for me, if you ever see me at a shoot, whereas you'll see, you know, Brant and Bryce moving around with cameras and stuff like that, I literally have this pair of headphones on and I'm just, you know, looking at meters and kind of making sure it's at a certain decibel level and making sure there's nothing else kind of going on because we use a lot of wireless stuff that can, you know, cause a little bit of interference here and there and sort of making sure that above all else that Brant and Bryce get as clean of an audio signal as possible, you know?
Yeah.
It's weird knowing that I have a credit and that I am there, but that ultimately a lot of the front facing stuff you don't see me on just because, again, a lot of things I do are more at that moment. You know, it's hearing things and judging, is the music bleeding in? Is this enough of a signal that can at least be put through some sort of filter that can get just the bare voice? Because a lot of people don't know, but when we record, we do record at real bars and typically those aren't the best sound environments.
Not so much.
Yeah, it's definitely a spectrum. But even in some of our worst sort of scenarios. Like, I think we might get to this a little later, but one of the videos that we came out with this month, we shot it in an incredibly loud. It had been louder at that bar than it had ever been because there was a live band. And the audio still ended up coming out great, partly because of you know, your ability to gauge, you know, what's going on every channel.
Yeah, a lot of it is looking at – this is my, like, my job at a scam school shoot and anything I tend to do is looking at a lot of decibel meters and noticing that – and this is now technical talk, and I might as well get into this. Usually on a decibel meter, you'll see sort of this levels of like of certain dB, like minus 6, whatever, and there's always a noise floor at about minus like 30 something, you know, very, very briefly. Now, headphones will amplify that and I'll hear everything. And so it's kind of a you know, I have to almost remind myself that things I hear in the headphones aren't truly what they are mm-hmm. in the post mix mm-hmm. Because it'll sound way more amplified than anything else because I have the volume jacked up so I can hear it. And so a lot of it becomes judgment saying, okay, well, when they talk, they're at this amplitude. When they're not talking, they're at this amplitude. And to figure out that kind of difference, say, well, okay, you can hear them, you can hear a clean signal, but you still hear this, like, you know, noise floor. And even I think that's sometimes appropriate because sometimes if you don't have that, people don't think you're actually there and you're doing like this weird ADR kind of thing.
And what's tough when you're in that audio recording role, because that's something I've done multiple times, is that what you're listening to during the recording of a show is a single mixed down feed of all of the audio channels.
Yep.
So you get into a tough spot of there's a lot of bleed, you know. We try to keep people close, so Brian is very loud and so you hear him a lot on all the other channels, and the tough thing is kind of drifting with people who aren't talking very much because it looks like they're talking and you're
staring at, like, when the person's talking, staring at the channels. And we use an H6 there on stuff, the Zoom H6. It sort of has this sort of LCD sort of display that shows all the different audio channels going on at different volumes. And a lot of it just becomes staring at this, knowing, okay, this person's talking. Let me look at their signal while they're talking. All right, it's fine. And even being ready to adjust on the fly, because even at times it will come to things like like, for example, the two worst audio moments I have and my biggest sort of, like, you know, if I have critiques to myself that I'm always like really paranoid about, it's always at the end of an episode, at the end of a recording, when they're like, yeah, we succeeded the trick, woo, or the, you know, the toast that Brian typically would do is like, toast me. And that's usually when things will hit peak. And it's like, I can't adjust four channels at the same time. And so it becomes a sort of like balancing act of accepting that certain things are just going to peak and certain things are not, and trying to find that like happy balance, because it becomes like, you know, whenever Brian laughs, and that's one of my, you know, one of the things I've learned is that Brian just has this very boisterous laugh that just, you know, immediately hits the red no matter what volume setting I have.
I deal with that on the podcasts a lot of Brian has a real big range of, you know, well, sometimes he'll be talking real quiet like this, but sometimes he'll talk like this.
Yeah.
And at some point there's not so much you can do. And kind of what doesn't help is like the Zoom H6 is really nice and really portable, but all of the channels have these rotary knobs.
Yes.
Compared to like a traditional mixer would have faders that you could more easily handle. But
right, handle at least in a sort of, you know, tandem session.
Right.
I think one of the hardest challenge I ever had in live audio was definitely during the, and I don't know if I talked about this, was definitely during the South By event.
Sure.
Because it became this sort of like one channel to rule them all situation. And so I was literally balancing the one channel through like five different, you know, through all the different inputs that happened. And it became this like, okay, just keep it where I could keep it. And it became this really delicate balancing act, because, you know, if you think kind of managing four channels separate voices is easy, I mean, ultimately at least you can at least kind of split the difference. It's harder when you have this like one channel and like five different volume inputs that can vary from volumes from Justin to Brian to, you know, Odak to the time to Tom to even the band. And it became this, you know, very, very crazy thing of just like riding the dial
Yeah.
Throughout the entire event. I don't know if you can see me. You can see me. I don't even know you can see me on camera. I think that's. I think you see, probably briefly.
Times,
you might be able to see.
There was definitely a moment at the beginning of that episode where you gave the thumbs up, and I'm pretty sure that was in the episode. It was pretty good.
Yeah. But I think we talked a little bit about this right after the South by episode happened. But you definitely ended up doing double duty than what I kind of expected you would have to, just because partially of a time constraint and also because the board was separate from the band.
Yeah,
you kind of had to also be there. Dude, for that,
yeah, it was very eye opening for me because like I going into things, I always get nervous that I don't know what I think I know, mm-hmm. And I always second guess myself and misjudge sort of things. But the minute it was all over, it was like I realized, oh, I can actually work a board, and yeah. I didn't even know I could work a board, and it became this like learning things of aux channels and all this stuff just right there in the thick of it, in the middle of it. That, 'cause I even during it, I had actually screwed up their monitors. That's why they had to like readjust the volume like before they went live. If you read the event itself, because I had literally fucked up their monitor feed by accident, not even knowing what I was doing. Like, oh shit, okay. And then I figured it out, and I'm was like hyper on point. But I even learned that your job is a little hard too sometimes, because I had to cue at least some live music and some live the stuff like that you would typically do when it comes like go time for that kind of show.
Yeah, for the live podcasts, definitely. There's a lot of media management when you're taking on a role of a live producer, but it's also something where it's not like you're doing like super hard computations on the fly. It's just all of these kind of basic computer skills that you've got, you have to do like a million of them at once. And if you had another two hands, then like it'd be a piece of cake. But you've got switching and all sorts of stuff going on, so it's not easy for anybody to and the difficulty comes in just how many things are happening at once.
Right, and the idea that it has to happen like now, and especially for that event, it was we had a very, very tight window in the end of it all. Mm-hmm.
Open Bayou asked, does the Zoom H6 recorder record on a separate track or mix it on editing, or do you record the H6 into the camera?
So I can say this because I have my own H6, and I know for a fact it actually multi-tracks it. So basically on the H6, if that graphic are up, basically you'll see the four channels there, the 1, 2, 3, 4, and there's actually a module on top that you could technically add a six and a seventh XLR channel if you bought the module to add it to it. But you'll notice there that there's on there, there's the 1, 2 and the 3 and the 4. So you can set it up to have those both be two in pair stereo channels if you wanted to. We typically don't do that for obviously sort of things, reasons. But what happens is once those are recorded, they're all recorded in parallel on four different channels. That sort of makes it easier for these two guys here to sort of, single in on a voice, because usually even if there's some bleed, it really picks up cleanly the person who has the mic on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, if this were a smaller operation, like a news sort of thing, it would be pretty traditional to have some sort of audio going directly into the camera.
Right.
Like if this were a single camera or some sort of news piece. But generally, we almost always, like, I'm trying to think of anything other than the live podcasts, which mostly don't have separate audio feeds. Pretty much everything we do has a separate audio recording, or an external audio recording, rather.
Yeah. And I mean, the live podcasting stuff doesn't get edited hardly to any degree. As much as our like produced stuff like Scamp School or Modern Rogue or something.
Yeah, definitely. Like Weird Things, we do significantly more editing on, just because the pace of that show is a little different. But also, that's an audio only show, so that's kind of a different thing. But
right.
But yeah, the podcasts and the produced YouTube stuff are different in terms of workloads as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of jealous. It seems like fun. It seems like fun working on audio, and I'm over here like making decisions, like with like, oh, we got to get this weird shot over here because I don't know if I got it.
It's far easier. The hardest part about working with audio, and this is something, if I have any sort of critique on being an audio person, that is that you do get blocked away from the world. in that
sounds great.
It is and it isn't. It is when you want to get work done when you're concerting. It isn't when you don't realize the shoot is done and no one told you, oh, by the way, Robert, we're done filming. You can stop the recording. It's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, it's not a big deal, but that's one of the weird things. It also doesn't help that the volume, and this is something that I've learned as an audio guy, that everyone, my favorite thing being an audio person is that any guest that realizes I can hear them, they always make the same comment of like, you know, the audio guy can hear us, right? Like, we shouldn't be talking about this super private thing that I have no knowledge of and I don't even give a damn what they're talking about. Mm-hmm. Because it's always that. The other weird thing is that because Jason and Brian typically share interests that I have, and I love talking with Jason about stuff like that when they're on the show, I'll hear Jason mention something cool that I'm like, I want to chime in. Oh,
but
wait,
100
I'm so
feet
far
over
away.
That
no
way.
One can hear me anyways. And I'll hear a funny comment and laugh. And no one else is laughing around me because here I am in headphone land hearing everything hyper-amplified, hearing everyone talking. And it's like, I want to join the conversation. Oh, that's right. I can't join the conversation. I'm literally like 30 feet away hiding behind the camera, you know, because no one shall see Robert with his audio things doing this because that makes boring video.
What's funny about that phenomenon, because I've definitely had that too, of just like, you want to chime in because it sounds like they're right there next to you, and then you look up and they're not even looking at you. It's like that problem feels like something. It's like, well, I don't need to chime in because I'm not near anybody, so just let's listen. It would just leave only ear prints. Even in the moment, you want to be like, oh man, no, yeah, I want to talk about.
Well, because I've already heard from some people who have been on our show that have been guests that have apparently been in like broadcast companies and like, you know, real professional, I put that in quotation mark stuff. And they've always said a lot of the sound guys are not as personable, or they're just sort of like, yeah, whatever, and kind of do this. Whereas I always make sure to say hi, you know, introduce myself and stuff. Because I always feel weird that here I am going to attach this little lapel mic to you and I might run it up your shirt and everything else. And here I am touching you. And I feel that's always like this weird invasion of space, you know? Yeah. Like, I'll joke with Brant all the time and do that just because it's funny. But with somebody I don't know, it's like I'm going to manipulate this because I need to make sure this is in the right position so I can get a clear signal so I can hear you talk so you can have fun in the show. But I'm going to also, you know, clip this to the back of you. So I might touch your, you know, your butt here and there, not because I, you know, want to feel you up, but because that's the job I got to do today.
Yeah. Is that, you jealous about that, Brant? Having to touch people?
Yeah.
Oh, no. No.
Yeah, I'm about to say.
I want to be as far away from everybody as much as possible.
Yeah, you forget the other part of being the audio guy, which is setting up the equipment part. Yeah. See, it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
You have to sort of take everything with it. And it definitely adds a challenge just because, like, I'm such the guy that I'm like, I don't want to impose, and I know I have to do my job, and it's, you know, I have to, you know, mic this person up, and it's always explaining what the hell I'm going to do because, again, I don't think anyone goes in the bar thinking, oh, yeah, I'm going to be on an internet show where they're going to attach a microphone to me.
Mm-hmm. So how long have you been working with the Scam School Austin crew? Has it been since we took over production?
Since day zero, yeah. Since day...
I guess so. So end of 2013.
Years. Yeah, basically when the team switched to Austin, Brian had sort of, you know, assembled the team of certain people. And when it came to audio, I guess I was the first one to come to mind just because of my experience in podcasting and everything else. And I think, like, the first shoot we did was... It was at Nomad, right? I think Nomad Bar, and I think Corey was on those episodes, which made for a fun bombastic.
Yeah, I want to say Corey and Jason.
Yeah, which Corey, you know, is very animated. You know, Corey Coleman of Double Toasted fame and former Spill fame.
We had two filming days back to back at the Nomad.
Right.
And I know we shot one episode, and I think that might have been the like 100-year-old card wizard trick or whatever with Jason, maybe. I know that was definitely in that first batch, but yeah, we shot like three episodes that first time.
Yeah, because it's our first time doing it. I don't even know. I never, like, that's always the one thing I never know is what episodes are coming out when, because when we film typically at a shoot, we try to shoot for at least four episodes at the most. And I think we've learned our limit might be 5, because I think there was that. I don't know if you've talked about the.
Yeah, we had a shoot where we shot like 7 episodes, and then
came.
At least 2 of them ended up just being scrapped.
That became a night. That was a night of something.
Yeah.
But regardless of that fact, since it's our first time, we didn't quite know what we're doing, and I didn't know what I was doing in terms of like being live and doing monitoring sound. It turns out, you know, I did pretty okay. Else, I wouldn't, you know, still be here, I guess. Mm-hmm. But hey, look, you never know. Yeah. I never take anything for granted. And so I'm, you know, my first time, I was hyper paranoid because here I am, you know, first and foremost at that time, working with wireless for the first time, you know, trying to hear this like interference and going like, and being at this moment of like not knowing how all this stuff works, you know, because that was the first time I used an H6, the first time I'd used a lot of this equipment. And it became this like, you know, because even then, like, I didn't get the note from one of you guys to like keep it at -6 dB. And this is like all production stuff. So I can say to a certain degree, this is just sort of broadcast things. So mm-hmm. I was like, well, I'll keep it lower than normal because that's what I typically do. Just so that way there's a lot more room to, you know, to do things and to not, you know, because again, right. The worst thing you can do in any audio signal is
be too loud. And
yeah. 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 To be blown out because you can't, like, you can repair a lot of stuff. You can't repair blown audio.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, very cool. We got a couple other things on the list on the topic here on the topic sheet. But hopefully you'll join us, Roberto.
Yeah, of course.
Get out.
It's like, okay,
we're done with you.
So
that would be the weirdest thing. Just like, well, it's been a pleasure to have you. Now we're going to talk about the news.
We just don't say anything. Bryce just hangs up. And then it's like a 2-person show.
Peace.
So if you watch our Friday videos, you'll know we just got back from a pair of live stage shows that occurred within 24 hours of each other in 2 different parts of the country.
I remember you talking about this at this shoot that you're like, yeah, tomorrow we're going to go fly. And I was just like, I can't believe you're doing this at all.
Yeah, I wasn't afraid of it because as far as the stage shows go and traveling, like, you know, it's not super scary or anything for me. But there were definitely points in it that made me really just distinctly unhappy. So it was all out of our control, these things. So it's not like, you know, it's I put it on Brian's shoulders or anything. But the first show was in Northern Virginia, and on our flight to the second show to St. Louis, we had to finish the first show, which started at basically 3 a.m., tear down the show once it was done, and go straight to the airport to catch the 8:45 flight to St. Louis. And once we got there, we checked in, and the gate agent goes, you know, you know your flight's been delayed.
Oh, no.
To, like, 11 o'clock, right? Which we did not know because we were driving and didn't check it. And so what would have been like an hour and a half wait in the airport ended up being like five hours or so. And it's Baltimore International, so it's a super busy airport, and there's not really any great place to sleep or anything. And we're kind of running on, like, this was kind of the end of our kind of awake period.
You're on fumes at this point.
Yeah. And so between that and they changed the gates and stuff, and they were we were getting kind of antsy because the flight trackers were saying the plane took off and all sorts of stuff. So that was a point where I was just like, I can't sleep. I don't want to be awake. This is really just bad. This is the part that I
that is probably the most miserable part of traveling, is when you have to be alert and you don't want to be alert.
Yeah. Because there was this like all-nighter sort of mode that I had kind of gotten into, and so your adrenaline takes over and you don't need to sleep and you kind of don't even need to eat very much. But once you are in that mode and you are like, well, no, I'm secure enough right now. I could go to sleep right now if I needed to. It's real tough to just like break out of that and get any sort of refreshment.
Well, especially with traveling, like for me, whenever I'm flying, I can sleep on a plane, but until I've gotten on the plane, until I'm up in the air and I don't have to worry about anything else until we land, like I'm hyper awake, because just like in the event of like flight gets delayed, gate gets changed, something happens that you have to like book and get moving, else you're going to miss your thing. And if you fall asleep and if Brian's like, I'm going to take a nap too, and then you both wake up like, oh, the plane left and it's, you know, 4 a.m. now.
Right.
What do we do?
Like definitely, apparently Brian was saying that he had texted maybe 6 or 7 different people saying, hey, my plane is leaving at 10:30. Can you just text me then or right before then so that I know and I won't sleep through this thing, because I'm super scared and they changed shit on me. So yeah, that was definitely a concern for Brian. I just had a timer. I just set a timer on my phone. I mean,
smart.
It just seemed like I don't need somebody to text me.
No, I wouldn't even trust it. I would set an alarm or something. Like I said, like 8 different alarms if I had to do that kind of thing.
The other sort of really rough point was the second show, which was outside at a Tri-County Fair. There was like a stone amphitheater there, but we ended up, I guess they were using the amphitheater right beforehand. So we got set up on a walkway. If you're watching the video, you can see here on this park's sort of walkway with the whole crowd sitting in the grass, which is sort of a nice, like, that's a nice, you know, idea. But mm-hmm. It was definitely over 105 degree heat index that day. Because it's Missouri in June. So we were just fucking dripping sweat, just and that was also my first time doing a show that wasn't like on a stage with like a curtain that I can hide behind so that people don't see me a lot.
Yeah, outside shows are kind of weird.
Yeah.
We did one in like a parking lot once.
Brian was saying that in a previous year that he had done this county fair, he had been set up on the back of a flatbed truck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, there's this weird thing. It's like, well, do I want to stay completely out of sight? Do I want to be very far away from the stage when I'm not needed so that nobody thinks I'm doing anything or like... Because I don't want to mess up the mystique of like, oh, well, that's his assistant right there. He's just, you know, he's telling him what to do. And it's like, no, man, I don't even know how half this stuff works. I learned how on this trip, I realized one of the things that Brian does on the show is actually a magic trick and not like a weird body thing.
Yeah.
Well, because like one of the things like, I remember about Brian's stage show, especially at the early days. I don't know if obviously the case now because you're there. Mm-hmm. But a lot of some of the cues were actually foot driven. Like I remember him saying at one point, like he had like, you know, special kind of buttons put in his shoe or something like that, where he could trigger audio cues and stuff like that.
He's got these remotes that I think are made out of like garage clickers or something that can advance the musical cues. In the first show, one of them broke off and just like did not stopped working, like fell off of his shoe, which was a little sloppy, but. Like the stage show has a surprising amount of like duct tape. Well, not surprising, but like some real old school like fixes and systems on it. Yeah. And so we did the second show and we actually got a chance to sleep Steve, a diamond clubber, was actually there. He actually came in about halfway through the show. He was on his way driving to Denver or something, and he was like, oh, well, this thing is on my way, kind of, maybe. So he stopped by, and we went and had food with him, and then we just conked out, and that was it. It's, you know, a lot of the discomfort parts of it were just, like, how much time we spent traveling, and, like literally the day before, we slept all day so that we could be ready for this 3 a.m. show.
Well, because if you're like, because I was up that late and you know, doing other things, and typically when I'm up that late, I'll see Brian. If I see Brian tweet, I'm like, oh, why is he? Oh, right, that's right, he's traveling today.
Yeah.
And I'll always, it's often I'll see that. It's rare that I'll say it, but it was, I can imagine, especially when you have a flight back to back, that's the hard one. So, because typically when you get a flight, like, and you have a hotel, like, okay, fine, well, I got the thing done, I can crash the hotel, I can sleep and recharge to a degree. But when you have to go from airport, show, and then straight to airport again to make it to another place to do it all over again, it becomes a sort of grind.
Yeah. Yeah. Watching that video, there was definitely like, I got a sense of, oh, right, there are some things that I kind of liked about that, but I'm really glad I'm not doing this anymore.
Yeah. My
favorite part is always when I'm on the plane, yeah. I could be like, yo, everybody, look out. I'm in Chicago today. What?
Yeah.
What? Because I'm like, I'm such a like insular person who just stays in my apartment all the time that's like super novel to me. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, most of the experience is kind of give or take for me.
Yeah. And it's a lot of, it is really just a lot of downtime, especially with these trips. Like the first show was maybe an hour away from the airport and the second one was like 2 hours away. So it's a lot of just like, we're sitting in the car and just, mm-hmm. we're both listening to music or audiobooks or whatever. Waffleophagus, yes, I did say a 3 a.m. show.
So was that one of those like end of the year school kind of things?
Yeah, it was a graduation lock-in sort of thing.
Yeah, and that venue has hired Brian annually for forever.
Yeah.
It's a really great location.
Yeah, it is. It's really cool. And that crowd is like super, they're always super pumped for that show. Mm-hmm.
And the dude who helps you out, he's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy was real cool.
Uh-huh. Because usually Brian shows, and I have only had the luck of seeing a live stage performance, I think maybe 3 times total, mm-hmm. For Brian. All of them are usually fun. You know, it's rare that I don't see the crowd getting into it. Like, out of all things Brian does, I mean, Brian does a lot of things really well, but out of all of them, for sure, engaging a crowd and making sure that the crowd sort of in the moment ready makes for really, you know, dynamic show. I mean, that show in general is dynamic, and I can only imagine being, you know, behind the scenes of that is nerve-wracking at times.
I mean, a little bit. The way I see it, the way I, like, frame my role in the show is, like, mostly I'm taking stuff off stage. Like the bigger contribution is before the show, setting stuff up. Brian, I think, has talked about this, but he got kind of a little bit of a stomach bug right before that first show. So because he was contemplating just not taking somebody for these shows, but I ended up setting like 85% of that show up because, you know, he was just like not feeling very good. So that's kind of where I see it, is like the big thing is setting up and then just like
hitting your marks.
Yeah, striking stuff off the set. But so in that regard, it's not the worst. Like when you can kind of step back and bigger picture it, it's like that's fine. Like,
no, yeah. I mean, it's especially, this is not, I don't think this is your first time. They're not your first time doing a live show.
No, these were number 2 and 3 for me.
Right.
Yeah.
Have you gotten to the point where you get people to help you out cleaning out the
We did
the stuff.
So because
that stuff gets gross if you don't have somebody immediately take care of that.
If you haven't seen the show, Brian does the human crazy straw where he puts water, milk, soda, and orange juice in a big vat.
Sometimes beer.
I believe it.
Yeah, I'll believe it too.
And so we did that second show outside, and you know, it's outside, and there's all these signs, man, of like it's a watershed, and there's a riparian buffers, and all sorts of like environmental stuff, and so we're just like, I guess I'll just have to clean this up after the show. And thankfully, some people who were like super stoked about the show came by and did us a super solid and cleaned all that stuff out.
Nice.
Waffleophagus says that would make Dragon Con the first show. I don't count Dragon Con really, because that was like, I mean, I did help with a Dragon Con magic show, but there was another show that I went to that I consider the first, because that was a full stage show.
But yeah, if you don't clean it out like quickly and it gets effectively, but also like, there ends up being a coating inside of that long tube, mm-hmm. and then you have to go clean that out by like wringing it, which I did one day, and it took like 2 hours.
It sounds about right. I mean, that kind of you know, it's the mixture that goes through the tube is a very caustic mixture in general. Yeah. And that just like I've like even seeing that, like the first time I saw this, the whole thing, it's just like pouring like at one point it's like, and there's gasoline in here. Like that's what I expected just to go through it because who cares?
Mm-hmm.
That would be that might be dangerous.
It probably
I mean,
would.
He drinks it.
He drinks it at the
end. Yeah, what is he like? He has like lighter fluid in his.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, how much fuel do you think Brian's ingested? Probably exactly. A lot.
He's built up a tolerance.
Yeah. He's going to be like that guy.
But at that point, that would be good reasoning to like limit your exposure, maybe.
He's going to be like that guy in the East who wanted to be like a transformer, so he drank a bunch of gasoline for a long time and built up a tolerance to it.
Yeah, sounds about right.
That's basically Brian.
Yeah. So if you want to see the vlog that we did of that, check out the Scam School channel on YouTube. We put a video and there's a giveaway for the fire eating book. So check that out.
Emmerich in chat room says basically it's the recipe for grog from Monkey Island. And yes, it is. Yeah. That is what it is.
Yeah. Hmm. So Brant.
Ah.
I see you got a sort of you're kind of an existential sort of question.
It looks dire, doesn't it?
I'm a little afraid. I hope you're doing well. Are you doing okay?
I mean, I've had better, but I'm fine, I guess. I mean, that's more dire than the topic actually is.
Okay.
So I wanted to ask, and this I feel like Bryce could definitely speak to on some level, but maybe Roberta has some points as well. So when we make videos and stuff all the time, you know, we get all this feedback, all kinds of comments, all kind of whatever. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm pretty good at, you know, for like 48 hours, I keep up with that and I see what people are saying. I get kind of like I get the temperature of the room a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then after like about a week, like
just in the rear view,
anything anybody says about anything that's more than a week ago, I could not care less. Because to me it's like if somebody goes back and writes up some huge like, this is dumb about anything in the past. It's like if they came up to me and said, "Hey man, you had all of these typos in your sixth grade like English project," and it's like, I don't care.
Right.
Like that was forever ago.
Exactly.
So I kinda wonder like what's the limit for you guys? Like what's the breaking point at which it kind of just doesn't really matter that much anymore because it's just so you're so far detached from it.
Oh, that's interesting. I think we do three or four podcast shows here, and generally for those, I almost immediately am like, unless there's something technical wrong, in which case the word usually gets to me, like I'm like, that was great. We did a great show, and the people have it. So for that, it's a very short window because we try to do it well during the show, and after the fact there isn't a whole lot we do to change it.
Mm-hmm.
For the produced videos like the YouTube stuff, I'd probably say maybe a week or so because by then
you're already working on a new thing.
I'm working on a new thing. The comments are sort of in the long tail period of like anything that sort of trickles in is people who are like catching it later. And for the big thing is we do the giveaway puzzles on the Friday videos, and so that's the kind of thing where usually for the first like couple of hours after release, if not the first day or two, I try to at least make sure I go in and see, like, you know, there are people who like kind of like hint and wink at the answers and stuff, but then there are some people who just like flat out write the answer, and so you kind of have to police that in a way that is a little more stringent than we would on like a Scam School video, because there is a challenge element to that people actually really like.
Hmm. I'd be in the same boat. Like a week is about the time, especially when it comes to like a weekly show. Like even with my podcast, after a week has gone, unless it's like something that's sticking in my mind, it'll usually be factored out and completely forgotten about. Not because I don't care. I mean, I know it's on my content because I don't get a whole lot of comments in general. I tend to watch it like a hawk and kind of respond a bit quicker.
But you have to compartmentalize it. At some point, you have to be like,
well, because you know, you have to almost, especially when it comes to you know, a fan base. I mean, as big and large and diverse as Scam School is, that you know, you get the people who are like, "Cool show, bro, awesome thing," and then of course you get the "I miss the hair," or if it's an older video, like, "Oh, look, it's a spiky haired, you know, douchebag, which is always like the fun comment to see on any old scam school video because it's like the reoccurring theme.
Right.
But you know, then you get these people who are, and I think like one of the videos I remember in the past that had this sort of weird uptick of audience was the Rubik's Cube one where you guys showed off the scam school product for the trick.
Right.
And that this like group of like, you know, supporters of like, you know, speed runs of Rubik's Cube or whatever just came in mass and started just commenting on how this is a just something crazy like that. And
well, a part of it is you're talking about, here it is. The, I'm trying to remember what the name of the product is called. Solved. That's what it's called. Solved.
Right.
And you can see like 200,000 views, which is like super, super high for one of these Friday videos. And so I think you had a lot of people who were upset that the video wasn't teaching you how to solve a Rubik's Cube immediately. And all the SEO that having Rubik's Cube in your title, you know, right, brings kind of multiplied that by a bit. And so there were definitely like reverberations here, just in like, oh man, that was like a little bit of a negative reaction, but there, that is, I wouldn't say that we've made any major changes because of that.
Well, because that's not even with,
that's more of an outlier than,
right. But even with some of like the scam school tricks, like mm-hmm. there'll be outlier comments of people saying, you know, this is not real magic or something along those lines. And, you know, when people get really passionate about something, they tend to sometimes go a little overboard on things.
Yeah.
And also at a certain point, like comments and feedback stop being actionable. Like right. There's not really much you can do about it. And so it just sort of loses a lot of meaning.
Mm-hmm. Especially because you'll get people like in the Friday videos, a big thing we get is, oh, the answer is Friday fun time for real, which is like in the opening text effect, that's the last thing it cuts to every time, ever since we changed the name, it's always been there and it's never been the answer. But mm-hmm. there are always people who are in the comments who are like, oh, the answer is Friday fun time for real. And there was one point once we started doing the puzzles where John was like, people are putting in the wrong thing. They're putting in Friday fun time for real. How are they getting that? And so, you know, you could go in every week and be like, no, that's always there. Or it's just like, those are maybe just people who are new to the channel and they're not causing much damage by being wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Demon 5 says, Roberto, three years ago,
I saw that.
You said River City Ransom released in August 1987, but it's actually April 1989.
I probably did at one point. It's and the funny thing is when it, I mean, and
it's like you have to weigh like how big what they're saying is versus like
in the early days, especially in 8-bit early days, I got really paranoid about that stuff.
Yeah.
These days I don't, because you have to accept that no matter what somebody, you know, and it's the classic trope of the internet, like the well actually, and that kind of thing. And you have to almost accept that a lot of times you're not the expert on things, even though you may think off the top. Because again, when you're doing a conversation, you're like, you know, if you think about your own natural rhythms in conversations, it's like, I think it was this, I think it was that, maybe it was over here. If you don't know when that movie came out, you right. just, because that's not the important part of the story. The important part isn't when River City Ransom came out. The important part is, you know, it was this, you know, game by Technos with Japan and whatever and blah, 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 blah. And I think the same thing happens, especially with Scam School, because a lot of times you have a lot of these sort of technical tricks or certain things in there, and you have this fan base that knows all the jargon, and it's like, that's not the important part of the trick. The important part is not the trick. The important part is we're teaching this random bystander at a bar, mm-hmm. here is how the trick works, and here is how the mechanic works, and we're trying to explain it, you know. If typically in a shoot, it'll be like a 30-minute shoot, but you're cutting it down to like 10 minutes, 12 tops.
Right, right.
And
so does that kind of answer sort of what you were looking to probe with this? Like,
Yeah.
Because when you write, at what point does it not matter anymore in the doc?
At what point does it not matter
anymore? Make sure
anymore?
You're satisfied.
It's not an act. That's an accurate descriptor of what I asked.
I suppose so. I suppose.
But you just had very little context for it.
It sounds more like, Bryce, Roberto, At what point does it not matter anymore?
I mean,
when do you put in the towel and it's like, oh, god damn.
Maybe next month I will bring up that as a discussion, because then I think I would have a lot to say.
Okay.
But
at that point, I'll say just you know, play more Rocket League or something. There's got to be more to light. There's got to be something left.
I've been playing more Rocket League lately, and it's great.
It's like play the Overwatch. New patch. You know,
also
get to Stardew Valley. I don't care. Just something.
I've
you know,
been playing a little bit of Stardew Valley as well.
Stardew Valley is really good.
Yeah,
it is. It finally got its hooks on me recently. So,
but yeah, I was in a ranked match the other day, and then we finished the match, and somebody was like, "Diamond brackets." I was like, "What? What?
Oh.
What?
Wait."
Seriously?
They typed out diamond brackets, or they did the actual
actual diamond club sign.
That's and great. Wait, were you
they were on the other team, oh. And I was like, "Whoa, that's hey. Weird, but cool."
Yeah.
Hey,
I was playing with Nikon and console required.
Very cool.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I was playing Overwatch. This is only tangentially related, but I've already started talking about it.
Yes.
I was playing Overwatch a few weeks ago, and I was playing by myself, and ended up against a team that was the entire Drunk Kids Gaming team. Like, they were playing on a group together and had asked me to join at some point in the night. And I was just playing against them. And I was like, oh, hey, you guys. I'm playing against you guys. Oh.
I still need to get a copy of Overwatch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still haven't played it.
I need to.
Real quick, Jerryfax asks, does the importance level of the topic/event affect the time frame of caring?
Yes, I almost think the more it's more like for me recent versus. I mean, obviously, if it's something that's more news related, I might care about. But if it's like content related things like that, if it's the more recent thing, tends to be in my mind quicker. Unless it's some like big event looming in the distance, you know, but something like coming up, you know, like before the South by event, like that was what I was like really trying to figure out, you know. All that stuff. But if it's just like, you know, it just came out a week later, like my brain completely factors it out.
And I also think there's a weird thing where almost all of our feedback is like omnidirectional, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's saying, hey, I know that this is a problem that was caused in the editing workflow. So this is the editor. I'm going to bring it to the editor's attention because they are the only person who this means anything to and can do anything about.
Sure.
Right. Instead, they just go, oh, this was dumb.
Exactly.
This dumb thing happened.
Yeah.
Right? It's just kind of out there in the ether. But
I remember you telling me one point that you had like commented on a video once where you gave like technical stuff because the guy that you were familiar with, the content guy, and trying to give actual useful information. And if you're able to give those sort of things, I think those comments, no matter what the length is, are a bit weightier, but typically the comments are never things like that. It's always, this is dumb, and let me tell you why your channel should be doing this.
Well, and you could look at like maybe the demographics of this Game School channel, and it can be younger. It can be people who are a little more casually invested in the show and just generally don't feel like putting in all of the thought processes of like, oh, who should I direct this comment to? Because, you know, they just want to say, oh, I didn't like this thing.
Right.
Because that's as much investment as they have in it of just, I'm just going to tell you I don't like this thing. Someone fix it.
Yeah. But if
there's got to be a middle ground, probably.
Sure. And I mean, if they did come, my major point being, if they came directly to me and said something to me, like no matter when the episode came out, I would pay attention to that.
Yeah. Okay. I see. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas if it's just some
comment on
random nonsense, then it's like, well, I don't care. They don't care about me, so I don't care about the comment, really.
Oh, nice.
Well, they typically don't even know who you know. They don't even typically.
Yeah.
Those guys don't invest the idea of like knowing who you are.
Sure.
You know, and they just say, oh, this is a show. This is dumb. Trick bad.
Although it is kind of funny to me that so many people still have the idea of like, oh, Brian hosts the show, so he shoots and edits the show as well.
Well, because he's the face.
That's, yeah. You know. And so like a lot of these ads, especially the ones that I do, mm-hmm. have zero involvement with Brian, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't see them beforehand. He doesn't know about them beforehand.
Right.
And then so people are like, man, Brian should go work for an ad agency. Brian's so good at these ads.
There are many a times after a Scam School episode comes live, it goes live, that because I've already watched the trick itself, you know, when recorded live, and I've already heard all the things, unless it's something where I was like unless there's like a really crazy drawing that I'll ask about that. Typically I'll ask Brandt, all right, look, just at what time code does the ad begin? Because that's the thing that I'm like, or Bryce, the same things. I'm like, you know, who worked on this ad? Like, I'll ask the other one, I'm like, who worked the ad this week? And it's like, oh, it's this one or this one. And I'll comment accordingly, like, that was an amazing ad. Because especially both you guys come up with amazing ads. But I mean, at one point, I think like it's funny. I think you have like either you, Brandt, or you, Bryce, have like a spreadsheet, a Google like spreadsheet with like just a dump of ideas for ads, I think.
I've got that.
Brandt, it's yeah, you. Brandt. That's what I thought, yeah. But I wasn't sure.
I've also got like three lists on different list apps with a bunch of ideas. But.
And it becomes, because like at one point, like, and I keep telling you both, especially you, Brandt, that like domain.com gets a steal from like the involvement you both you two put in ads. And any ad advertiser that was signed with anything you guys do just gets a bargain on any of this stuff, because like this is stuff that would like ad agencies couldn't figure out.
Yeah, and I thought about it the other day, and it's like there have definitely been some like questionable ads where I've had ads where I don't even mention domain.com.
Yeah,
I don't even mention who they are. Just that there's like you're supposed to buy a website at a URL or something. But I figured that's like an acceptable cost. For them to make, because really, like, when they buy sponsorship spots from regular people, they're looking for ad copy, they're looking for people to get their messaging points across and all of that stuff. What I'm trying to do is not that. Like, I'm not trying to have an actionable ad where somebody sees that and they go, oh, I'm going to go to this URL and I'm going to get a website right now. Instead, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to build up, like, brand recognition in such a way that, like, recognition is the most valuable thing for any company. So if somebody's not going to see our ad and go, oh, you're right, I do need a website, I'm not going to change anybody's mind that they need a website right now. But the day that they do need a website, if they go looking for where should I buy a domain name and they see like a list of domain registrars, if they see domain.com, they're going to be like, oh, I know that. That's that weird thing that Scam School does.
Yeah. And Drew Facts, the chat room, says it's brand recognition.
It is brand recognition. Yeah.
And I agree. It's because
which is why sometimes we do things like this past week, which was super weird and super creepy and had nothing to do with domain names.
But I mean, it happens, because like if I think about like half the podcast I listen to, like I know every ad, you know, Harry's or Domain or, you know, Audible. Like I already have a lot of those products. But if I don't, like I won't remember the ad. I'll remember, oh, that's right, I heard it on the RT podcast, or I heard it on Scam School. I heard it on, you know, whatever other show I listen to, like that's what I'll remember. Like, oh, okay, let me use their offer code today, or let me use that. Sure. So, yeah, it has less to do with that. And it's always been the impressive part about the ads that we do in Scam School, especially you guys do, just how freaking crazy and bizarre. Like, I remember the only one that ever danced the line was the Parappa the Rapper one, I think, which, you know, I was happy that you did, just because, you know, Parappa the Rapper is an amazing game.
Yeah. That ad pushed back the episode launch time by like 4 hours or something, because it just wouldn't render out.
That's right. I remember that.
Because it was all off my laptop and it was all like heavy motion graphics stuff, and oh, what a mess.
Speaking of capitalism, we mentioned this last month on last month's episode about a video that was going to come out, and it has come out. You may have noticed a sort of compilation sort of trick video, 6 impromptu magic tricks that anyone can do. This is a video that Now You See Me 2 sponsored and sort of commissioned us to make. This was the video I was talking about earlier. Where
this is the challenging audio one, because like while we're doing this live, while everyone's doing the trick there,
the loudest live band that has ever been at this bar was playing on this day. And it was like tough to just like hear the other people like right in front of you.
The funny thing about this thing is there's a line. He's not even in the video, but like it's there's something that Jason said during the video about like what the band and I don't even know what it was in context to, but he had said like this random line of goddamn Mustang Sally's, and for some reason like that just stuck in my head for the entire shoot, and was just like kept hearing it every time I heard him say it. It's like he only said it once, but because I'm hyper hearing everything, it just stuck in my head. But that was a fun. That was an interesting shoot because that was the first time I think we had done anything that wasn't Scam School related. At least I had, because I typically just do Scam School stuff, and it was this shoot like where it's like, yeah, we're gonna do these six impromptu tricks for this. I'm like, oh wow, okay.
I mean, it definitely wasn't Scam School, but the motions of a Scam School were
for sure
pretty much there. Part of the reason I kind of, well, I really like the format and kind of the way that we shot this, where it was incredibly fast and just like, here's the trick, and we're gonna do the pickups on it immediately. And
yeah,
you know, we ended up doing, you know, these six different tricks in about the time it would take us to shoot two or three episodes, maybe, just depending. I don't know if you have any opinions on just kind of the way that shoot went, as far as like filming magic.
Honestly, like that whole thing was kind of a fever dream for me because I was coming off 4 hours of sleep and I'd worked like a 20-hour work day before that. So
yeah,
I barely remember it.
If I remember, Brant, you came in with like literally like shades and you know, aviators, if you will, just like
I had just woken up like minutes beforehand. It was a lot like a Scam School episode or two, just kind of like back to back. It was very much like a Scam School episode in that I didn't really know everything that we were filming beforehand, and then we just kind of went at it. We got more pickups than usual,
yeah.
But that's about it.
I think that was the big thing, is that we were very pickup heavy and less like focusing on, you know, now you're gonna perform it for me. And,
yeah,
and
it was,
have the pageantry.
Yeah, it was a lot less like reactionary and stuff.
Yeah, I think the advantage of that shoot and why is that it was all friendlies. It was all people that, you know, I mean, it was
sure.
John Tilton and his wife, and it made for, because they've been part of the show and they know sort of the flow of things, it made things quicker and faster. We didn't have to sort of, you know, teach. I mean, yeah, teaching the trick is always difficult in general. But because these people were familiar with the show, it just was that. It wasn't, and also tricks that had, in some cases, had been shown prior to the episode. So a lot of times it was easy to sort of get to the gist of these tricks, because we're not trying to entertain for like, you know, a one episode stint, but more of this is a very bite-sized chunk.
Yeah. Well, and I think just kind of the way we sort of approached that shoot and being very pickup heavy and being kind of a very lean sort of structure, I think I was really proud of the way the video came out, and I think it ended up looking really nice and is very like is also pretty easy to watch. Like, it is about as long as a kind of moderate length Scam School episode. I don't know. It was a thing that I was done with it, and I was like, well, that wasn't terrible, and I felt like I was doing something a little bit different, and what came out was something that if I was a viewer, I would really appreciate. And seeing that we're almost at a 250,000 views, I think maybe that.
I think it was definitely. It was definitely fun, you know, working on something sponsored in general, like that kind of thing. But overall, it was, again, it's just like, just because it was this bite-sized sort of thing, we didn't have to, we, you know, beyond you guys picking up, doing pickup shots, you knew that this was going to be edited down to 7 minutes. So we didn't have to go into, like, you know, the typical kind of motions of a Scam School shoot, the, you know.
Right. I'm just saying, 2 minute Scam Schools. Think about it. Think about it.
Also called Scam School Remix.
We're the remix generation.
Okay, sure.
See, I'm just going to go extreme and say Scam School Vines. That's what I'm going to. I'm just going to cut it down. I'm just, look.
Scam School Snapchats.
Yeah, look. I'm just saying. What if we just cut out the whole thing and do Scam School Facebook Live?
Just or Scam School. It. Scam School's over. That's the fastest Scam School. 0 second Scam School.
Yeah, I mean that's the most simplified version of it. Yeah.
Here's the trick.
Let's just keep doing books. One more thing. That came out. This was another Friday sort of product video. And who doggy was this This was kind of a tough one. This we had the Ghost Pepper Gumball product come out. Was this 2 weeks ago or so?
Oh, sure. Man. I've actually not seen this video out of fear.
And so we had a Scam School shoot lined up on that Thursday, and we, much like we did with the last Ghost Pepper candy, took it to the shoot and gave it to different people who were there.
Yeah,
and got different their reactions. If you're watching the YouTube video, that we're looking at the package right now, and the first set is these young girls who, like, they're kind of taking it in stride. They are like, man, this is a very hot candy. And then the second bit in the package is our friend JR and actually the girl's mom, Dina. And they're just like, yeah, no, it's like, whatever.
Yes, this is also a gumball. Is,
yeah.
Yes.
She goes, you know, oh, I mean, it's certainly the hottest candy I've ever had. And me, going into this shoot, I had the idea. I was like, there's a real good chance that I'm going to try this thing. I've never tried the Ghost Pepper stuff ever before. I'm trying to get myself into spicy foods bit by bit. I don't like spicy food at all. And so I see these things, and I'm like, oh, well, you know.
Baby steps.
It'll probably be bad, but that's how you get better at this. And so we do this third bit in the package, and it's John, Roberto, and myself. Also, my hair has totally, like, lost all of the... It's friggin' curled out because I've just been sweating the whole day. And we immediately crumble.
Oh, I crumble. Because, like, for me, and I'll point this out, I do like spicy things. I do like salsa. I do like that. But when it's pure capsaicin like that, when it's just purely hot, I can't take it. I have to just spit the thing out. I have to get rid of it. And it's just like that. And it's worse for me because, like, I'm so used to being behind the camera that, you know, I'm rarely in front of it. And I was told, and then John had asked me, hey, we might need some people to do this. Would you be up for it? And I told John, yeah, sure, I'll do it if there's no one else that can do this, if no one else is able to do this. And then, you know, we started having guests come on and people say, and JR say to do it. And I was like, cool, I don't have to do this. I can avoid this.
Oh, that's what you were thinking?
Yes.
Oh.
And then comes the, well, everyone else is doing it. All right, fine. Hey, JR, put these headphones on. Make sure that I don't sound too damn loud. Mm-hmm. And I'm not mic'd up at that time. So because I know how these mics work, I'm like literally talking into one of either John or Bryce's chest. Yeah. Just to kind of at least have my audio picked up in some capacity.
John ended up someone ended up on audio. Brian, you can even see briefly, holding the camera and laughing.
Yeah, he was still mic'd up because in the shoot he has like a hidden mic versus everybody else.
Right.
And so I was like, I don't have time to set this all up. Somebody else, we had like all three mics going on or whatever. And it just became this like, just try it. Okay, cool. And then we just got working because we're still kind of shooting.
Yeah. So like my expectations of like, this will be bad, but I'll live, turned into I might die almost immediately.
Wow.
Like I started hiccuping.
That's right.
Violently. Almost violently, to the point where I was like, I'm gonna vomit out all of my organs? Maybe? I might die right here today.
I forgot.
And talking about the capsaicin, like it gets on your tongue, and as your saliva sort of coats your tongue when you swallow,
it goes down.
It goes away, and your tongue is incredibly raw, and talking just makes it very bad. It was at the point where I had to keep a swig of water in my mouth just to not be, you know, crying at how bad it was.
For me, it was definitely like sugar tends to help. So I literally grabbed a Coke the minute I was done.
Yeah.
And it helped a ton.
You got to watch out with the carbonated drinks when you have spicy stuff, because that will clean your tongue, which actually makes it more susceptible to hot stuff like that.
Right. And what I would do, I'd have it sort of, basically what I would do is, in science terms, is I would drink the soda, let it sort of acclimate to it, have the have it hit a point where my mouth was no longer like you know, filled with capsaicin or something, and then it would heal. But it was rough because, like, for me, I think I either bit into it right away or I did something where a lot of people had sort of put it in the side of the mouth or did whatever. Like, I typically, you know, put right in my tongue. And because, like, the way those gumballs are, there's, like, a coating to it. It's sort of like almost a little
like
bit
a powder.
Of dusting.
It's got
right.
A powder,
it's a powder of you know, ghost pepper goodness.
Well, yeah. I don't know that the powder was the ghost pepper. I think that might have just been cinnamon.
Maybe. But whatever it was, it was enough. It was enough to cause it, because I already don't really like cinnamon gumballs, and I already don't really like the whole, like, you know, hot cinnamon stuff.
Sure.
And this was just sort of a that times 11.
Yeah. So this is all to say, if you actually like hot, spicy stuff, check out the ghost pepper gumballs on Scam Stuff.
And I'll say it's
be
here,
a video camera operator.
Right.
Because
right.
Then you'll never have to try it.
Sure.
Mad props to JR that time, because he was like,
I mean, he JR tried out the ghost pepper candy too and had pretty much the exact same reaction then, if I
right,
remember.
But he doubled mm-hmm. he doubled down yeah, to make sure Brian had it again.
But I also don't think that having two of the gumballs would double the heat necessarily. So yeah, I think that's it. There was one last thing we wanted to mention
in
the show here.
So last week there was some vague talks about stuff we couldn't talk about yet, and this month we thought we would be able to talk about it, but we still cannot talk about it. So
yeah, that's
stay tuned. We're in a holding pattern.
Holding patterns, indeed.
we're flying over Newark.
Yes. So that's going to do it for the June 26th edition of the Bizarre Briefing. Roberto, thank you so much for being on the show.
Totally.
And waxing with us. Waxing? Yes. Does
yeah,
that track?
It works.
Okay. Where can people find more of all the stuff you're doing?
Oh, I'm easy to find. You can find me on Twitter at Vincent404, or if you just want to check out anything I tend to do that's not Scam School related, head to CosmicRay.tv and just listen to 8-Bit Life. I've had both these guys on frequently many times interviewing, talking about all the stuff we talked about today and then some stuff.
Yeah. And check out Cinematography with these two guys.
Yeah, youtube.com/cinematography.
That too.
It's CinematalkR.
Someday Brant will release the video that he's been working on for a long, long time.
One of these days. One of these days.
I won't spoil it because it'll be an amazing video.
And then it'll immediately be taken down.
Probably.
Yep. But you guys do movie reviews and analysis over there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty
talk
cool.
About movies a lot. We do fun stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're really great videos that you put out too. They're
thank you.
Great editing.
We got to make some more one of these days.
One day.
Yep.
We got to do a movie soon.
Brant.
Uh-huh.
Besides Cinematography.
Mm-hmm.
If someone was like, "Hey, I like that Brant guy."
All right. Well, slow down a little bit, all right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/Gatowag, GATOWAG. You can find me on Twitch. I do stuff over there sometimes as well. Just if search Gatowag on your favorite website for connected social interaction. Mm-hmm. I might be there.
What's your Steam profile? How can people play Rocket League with you?
Add me on Steam at Gatowag.
That's the important one. Because
also tell me who you are and where you came from. Otherwise, I won't trust you.
Same thing with me.
That's why
same
I add
exactly.
Nobody on Facebook, because you're not allowed there.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter and on Twitch at Brycas, BRYCAS. This show you can find at bizarrebriefing.com. BIZARREBRIEFING. .com. We have a new website.
Man, it's so much easier to spell it when you can actually see it in front of you.
You can find all our past episodes, all of our links and stuff. It's a real great show and a real great new website.
What if they got all the way through this episode and they're like, "You're a liar. This is a horrible show, Bryce."
Now I'm going to stop listening.
Send your comments to... yeah.
But only if it's within like 48 hours of this episode going up.
Exactly.
Which won't be for another week.
Forget about it the next week.
So make sure
to address your comments directly to certain people saying, uh-huh. I agree with what Brant is saying. Bryce, you're full of shit. Robert, what the fuck are you doing here?
We record this show on the last Monday of every month pretty much at diamondclub.tv.
Approximately 2:30 p.m. Central Time.
Yeah. But follow us on Twitter. We tweet out when it goes live, so you can get in the chat room and all this stuff. Thank you guys for listening. We will see you guys next month. Bye-bye.
Also, shout out to my dad who's in chat.
Bye. What?
Oh. Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.